1-800-941-951-1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as the curtain comes down on one of the all-time Scottish Premiership seasons. Celtic are champions, that's how these seasons tend to end, but that does not tell the story of how we got there. The Hoops winning in the most dramatic fashion, Hearts so close but ultimately falling short in the end. And of course, the fallout continues to the post-match scenes on the pitch and in the city as well. I'm Gordon Duncan, and two men to cut right through it all are Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah.
I'm not sure the curtain's come down in anything quite yet, Gordon. I think there'll be more recriminations to come. Congratulations to Martin O'Neill and Celtic, Premiership champions for the fifth successive season. The league table does not lie. Commiserations to Derek McInnes and to Claudio Braga, manager and player of the year. But we've still got a bit more football to come. Martin O'Neill will chase a double against Dunfermline and Neil Lennon at Hampden at the weekend. Our own Mark Wilson and Partick Thistle against St Mirren in a playoff. And we've got a little matter of World Cup finals with Steve Clarke naming his 26-man squad tomorrow and Andy Halliday about to fall out with me about who's in it.
Well, I've got 25 locked in. I just don't know who my 26 is yet. But yeah, the most incredible Scottish football season ever is finished. And huge congratulations to Celtic and Martin O'Neill. And like Roger said, commiserations to Hearts, who I thought played an incredible role all season long. 250 days at the top, or 3 minutes away from making it the all-important 251. So again, incredible season. Fingers crossed if we can have even remotely summer next year. And Scotland, World Cup, the excitement starts.
And it's not all just about that title win at the weekend, because there are big stories everywhere. Obviously, the league positions were confirmed. Real cast iron confirmation, if you like, public confirmation from Andrew Kavanagh that Danny Rule's the man for next season. What do you make of that, Rangers fans? You can get your thoughts in there as well. And anything else, how would you sum up your season? How would you look back on it? What were the key moments? What were the turning points? All of the above and more. Let's round it all off. Of course, Saturday will take the focus as well, which is entirely understandable. But let's see how much we can squeeze in between now and 8 o'clock. 01419511025. I know you'll all be feeling emotional out there when you get to the end of the season and it's the last Monday where Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah will give us their result of the weekend and so on. So take it away.
It has to be the champion Celtic. The game of the season, they've won the game of the season again in dramatic style. 88 minutes, a VAR check, the second VAR check of the day. It was in keeping with everything the SPFL Premiership had thrown up through a chaotic and fantastic campaign, and Celtic deserved to win the league.
I'll go for the second important fixture that was taking place on Saturday, and it was Motherwell, the victory, Easter Road. Done so in comfortable fashion, and I thought it was almost the least that Motherwell deserved through what was, of course, an incredible season for them. So fourth place secured, European football next season, thoroughly deserved.
Goal of the weekend?
Goal of the weekend, Nicky Klitschko, I think. Killy against Livy. Livy go down to the championship, and Killy live to fight another day. Four wins out of five after the split for Neil McCann. They were only behind Aberdeen on goal difference at the end of the season. When you consider, you know, it looked grim for a lot of the season for Kilmarnock. They really have finished with a flourish.
I'm going to go for Yusuf Chermiti's second. Incredible technique. He showed that he's got some technique in his locker with that incredible overhead kick in the Scottish Cup tie against Celtic. That one at the weekend was equally special. You know, it pops up for his chest and just meets it on the volley, sweet as a nut into the top corner.
Howler of the weekend? Andy, you go first.
Well, I'm not sure if we've had many controversial refereeing decisions over the last couple of weeks, but I thought we got one at Easter Road. We all know that goalkeepers are protected species. If that's a foul on Salinger, then, I mean, wow. There's no way that's given as a foul against any outfield player anywhere ever. But
especially because Elijah just about 8 stone.
Yeah, they managed to find a foul within it. Made it a more nervous ending than it should have been, but thankfully it wasn't something that altered the result.
Howler for you, Roger?
Yeah, the pitch invasion at Parkhead. Celtic should be in full-scale celebratory mood, and I feel the recriminations after what happened at the final whistle have cast a shadow over it. You know, Martin O'Neill was on another radio station this morning and he's having to field questions about the behaviour of Celtic fans where he should be fielding questions about Dyson Maeda's goal, the emergence of Callum Osmond, the way they fought back from being behind against Rangers, behind against Hearts, and, you know, the scenes at Celtic Park, the scenes in the city centre, you know, the statements coming out from the police, from Glasgow City Council, Celtic having to apologise to Hearts for the behaviour of fans, it's spoiled it for me for Celtic.
Plenty more where that came from, I'm sure. But finish on a high, your top man of the final weekend of the league season goes to
Dyson Maeda.
Again,
I feel like he's played, it certainly wasn't a one man band, that's for sure, but the most integral part to win Celtic this league and get them over the line. 7 goals in the split against the other top 5 best teams in the country. The performance levels that go within it. And I mean, just the contribution's just there for everyone to see. I think it almost shows that sometimes when you're looking at nominees for the best players in the league, can definitely change your mind at the end of the season, because I'm always thinking he has to be in the top 4 in terms of nominees for player. You're just given such pieces.
You forget the 17 games without
forget about it. Forget about it. If you do what you've done in the post-split to ultimately hand Celtic the title, then, I mean, he's just went up a whole new other level over the last 5 games.
Same game. I think we have to go for Don Robertson. The referees, as everyone says, have been in the firing line. His colleague John Beaton was really in the firing line last week. I thought he handled the game really well. I thought they got all the big decisions right between him and the VAR official, Kevin Clancy. And at the finish, it could have been even more chaotic in terms of, you know, if he doesn't end the game and the game has to be abandoned, can you imagine what Scottish football would look like today? I think he did the right thing.
A misty-eyed romanticism to finish off the season. A referee getting the top man of the weekend on a Monday night. The one and only time in the proud history of this show. Let's go 01419511025. Jerry is on. Jerry, how on earth would you sum up what we've just witnessed?
Gordon. Good evening, Gordon. Good evening, Roger and Andy. How are you?
Hello, Jerry.
Well, Gordon, this has to be one of the most extraordinary histories of the ending of a season that I've been supporting Celtic. And I think when we look back on it from years from now, we're not going to remember just how we won the trophy, not just the wins that got us there and the way sort of some of the players dragged us over the line, but the sheer resilience of the team and the support that all came together for that final day was absolutely magnificent. What I wanted to highlight, though, was just some of the challenges that Martin O'Neill faced over his 2 stints with the club this season. I mean, we went almost a year without a recognised striker. And we lost Cameron Carter-Vickers from pretty much all of the season. And I've mentioned over the last 2 seasons, whenever we have lost him for even a short time, the team has weakened. They're really weakened without him. He brings that sort of resilience at the back, that strength at the back, and the calmness across that back four. Without him, we've seen in games how shaky the Celtic defence could be. We also lost Jota the whole of the season. You know, he was starting to find his feet coming back to his last year, you know, and the sort of lead up to the end, and that bad knee injury sort of got him. But over the time as well, if I go even back we've lost Arne Engel through big periods of the games. Arthur Johnson out for our last part of the season. Him coming back sort of strengthened us in there. And even Kasper Schmeichel, who was out there playing half the season on one shoulder. That alone would have broken most teams and most managerial and coaches. But the chaos off the pitch as well didn't help. Brendan Rodgers' saga for one, the noise, the protests against the boards. And the board brought in Martin O'Neill back to steady that ship during that short period when Brendan left us. And he did so during that period magnificently. And then the appointment with Wilfred Nancy, you know, dropping 12 points. The League Cup final loss to St Mirren at Hampden. Any fan worth their salt would have said the season slipped away from us at that point. And the unprecedented Mars and Celtic board normally don't do this very often, but you know, to get rid of Wilfred Nancy after 33 days and then go back to Martin O'Neill to come back, not just as interim manager this time, but to be a manager for the rest of the season, that somehow rolled the years back. And I'm just glad as a Celtic fan that I, you know, some younger fans like my son Daniel and my mate's 2 boys, Connor and Harvey, they got to see the effects of someone like Martin, who's a Celtic managerial legend from his first stint. They heard all the stories about him, and to actually see him in person, how he galvanised the team at the grand old age of 74. Mm-hmm. The players and the fans, he gave us belief again. You know, he led us to that Scottish Cup victory at Ibrox against all the odds. Without, I think, and my maths might be correct, I'm sure we were without seven first-team players that day, and arguably two of our most influential players in that match, with Callum McGregor and Kieran Tierney being ruled out on the morning of the game. They know exactly what that fixture means to us, and he's dragged us back into a title race more than one occasion this season.
Let me put some of this to the guys, Gerry. How much of it does come down to Martin O'Neill, do you think? Because, look, some of the points Gerry makes, there's a lot of ground covered there, and it's probably worth acknowledging that Celtic, what this season's shown is Celtic start with so much advantage over the other team, and they've deserved it, by the way. But I'm talking about like the money they've got, the squad they've got. They were able to carry all those things that Gerry mentioned. You know, that's adversity at Celtic can feel different to adversity at other teams, but the way that Martin O'Neill impacted things surely can't be in question.
Yeah, listen, Andy mentioned Dyson Mira's impact at the end of the season, but no one had a bigger impact on Celtic winning the league than Martin O'Neill. First time round, he steadied the ship after Brendan Rodgers resigned, and second time round, he picked up all the pieces after the debacle of the Wilfred Nancy tenure. After they lost at Tannadice, I think he had a long look at it. He said publicly, Celtic would need to win 7 from 7 to win the league, but the decisions he made were the decisions that won the league, because you didn't see Chivanchara or Adamu or Mvuka or Ben Arthur or any of these guys. You hardly ever saw Oxlade Chamberlain. You only saw cameos from Iheanacho, albeit they were quite important cameos at times. Look at Firth Park last midweek. But he went back to the guys who had, in most part, done it before, the ones he knew he could trust. And he stuck with them, and he believed that those were the players who would win the league for Celtic, and he was proven correct.
See that first bit, Andy, that Gerry mentioned, because all along we kept hearing people saying that if Celtic are going to win it, it's because that's what they do. You know, they've got a winning mentality, they get it over the line. And I think we would all have to admit, at various times you kind of question, well, what does that really mean? Yeah, they've won titles, but have they come from third place before? Have they done it in the face of some of the changes that Gerry mentions? Do you think that is ultimately what we saw come to the fore then at the end?
Yeah, I think so. I think a winning mentality, a character within the squad. I mean, how many times have Celtic scored a goal in the last minute to win a football match? And it almost feels like a lifetime ago when we sat where we're sitting just now in the first 6 months of the season, and every Monday it was a call about the Celtic board. It was a call about the atmosphere in the stadium. And for me, I think Brendan Rodgers caused a lot of that friction within that time. And almost one of the most impressive things that Martin O'Neill's done since he's came back is getting the club pulling in that one direction. And everyone that's been going to Celtic Park over these three games within the split, I've all mentioned the change in atmosphere, you know, the change in energy within the ground. And a big part of that has been down to the manager as well. And that's not even beginning to talk about his in-game changes, because we've spoke so much about Celtic's lack of depth in their squad. How many times has their bench made a difference in the game? And again, the weekend against Hearts, needing a goal to win the title in the last 20 minutes. You know, he changes shape for probably the first time this season. I don't remember him changing shape at any other point, but he brings off Austin Trustee, puts on Callum Osmond, he goes with the two strikers, and instantly the momentum shifts towards Celtic. And then, like he says, they do what they've done so many times this season, and they get that all-important goal at the end.
Let's thank Gerry and bring in Andrew. Andrew, all along, Celtic fans kept saying this would be the sweetest one if you could get it over the line. Is that the way it feels now?
Yeah, 100%. Hi guys, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, 100% for me. I think so. I'm 39 years old. I think probably stopping the 10 is the only one that sort of surpasses this for me. So my dad passed away last year, and I sat with his scarf on, and when Callum Osmond ran over the halfway line, I didn't even see the goal. I just kind of collapsed with the scarf and had a few tears. Just couldn't believe it. But the reason for my call is I feel like Celtic are being detracted from the success of what Martin O'Neill has actually done by probably a media campaign by not you guys, but by certain people in the media for the past 10 days since that Motherwell game to smear any sort of success that Celtic have had. There's been conspiracy theories by people such as Chris Boyd, Ali McCoist, Derek McInnes as well, said in his interview when he heard there was a 96-minute penalty, didn't even need to ask who it was for. This sort of media-driven hysteria has caused now, especially these Celtic fans who are in the park, which for me is absolutely mental. I don't know why people do that. I hate it. And then obviously them getting in people's faces, goading Hearts players at a time which they would have been absolutely devastated. I hate watching it. I absolutely hate watching it. However, we seem to just be taking Hearts' word for it at the minute, that players were assaulted. This is disgusting. It's a disgrace. And the scenes of them running in the park is not good. I don't like it and I hate it. But we just seem, there seems to be a pylon just now at Celtic that they're trying, there's certain parts of the media are trying to discredit Celtic's success over the last 7 weeks. Because even as little as 4 weeks ago, when Rangers were only a point behind Hearts, there was people like Chris Boyd again laughing in the media when Hibs scored a goal against us that hit off Joe Newell's hand. And he said, oh, we just have to trust the refs have got it right. We've just got to trust VAR. And then you fast forward to the Motherwell game and the hysteria that came out of that. Because the real disgusting thing for me in the last 10 days is that a referee had to have 24-hour protection by police at his house. That, for me, is the real shame of that. People running on the park. It happened where Hibs won in the Scottish Cup. It's a release of emotion because all season we were told we could not win this league. So I get people spilling onto the park. I do not get people confronting people and doing all that. I hate it. It's disgusting and it shouldn't be happening. But there seems to be a real genuine unacceptance of Celtic winning this league because people told us 45 weeks ago even that this couldn't possibly happen. And I just don't think a lot of people can accept it.
Well, listen, we've congratulated Celtic at the top of the show, Andrew. As I said, they've deservedly won the title. I'm not sure I've necessarily buy into, you know, some of the points you're making. The stuff about John Beaton is ridiculous, but in moments like this, there are a lot of things that sadden me about society. The situation with John Beaton last week, which is now in the hands of the criminal justice system, what happened at the weekend, I suspect in the next 2 or 3 years, it will become law in Scotland, as it is in England and Wales, that coming onto the field of play becomes a criminal offence. And you'll see that when people come on, as they did, they'll just be arrested and they'll be subject to football banning orders, etc. etc. I think it's inevitable that that's going to happen now. It wouldn't surprise me if it's one of the recommendations that come out of this inquiry for the March 8th, you know, the Old Firm Cup game that Celtic won at Ibrox. I think something like that might come out as well. I just think that there's a lot of bad things, sinister things, things that I don't like that are coming out in society in the last few days. And to a certain extent, you're right. All of it put together has overshadowed what should be a terrific sporting achievement by Celtic. Doesn't matter how the season started, doesn't matter about the Wilfred Nancy bit in the middle, but Celtic, over 38 games, have accumulated 2 more points than anyone else and deserve to be champions. We should be sitting here tonight purring about the performances of the Tierneys and the McGregors and the Nugrins and the Yangs and the Midas. But because of things that have happened, and I'm not blaming any one set of supporters at all, but some of the behaviours that we've witnessed in the last few days inevitably overshadows a great sporting achievement.
And then, and by the way, this is not a criticism of you, Andrew, but then it snowballs because Andrew's got the choice to come on and talk about the good things that his team's done and the players that he likes, but he's been taken in more by that argument and wants to defend it. I want to repeat, that's Andrew's right, that's not a criticism of him, but then you're sort of never going to escape that cycle. Andrew covered a lot of ground, what did you?
Well, I thought he was going to tag Hugh Keevans in it next time.
Well, he usually gets the blame for everything.
When he mentioned the end of it, people saying they had no chance over the last 4 or 5 weeks. But listen, Andrew, I'm sure you can appreciate that in this country, everything's under the microscope when it comes to refereeing decisions. And that's regardless of the club. I mean, I sat here on the Monday after Celtic went to Easter Road and says that I felt that Celtic's should have had a penalty with a push for, I think it was Josh Campbell and Negrin. I felt that Hibs' goal shouldn't have stood. So, they're under such... They're highlighted so much when you've got a title race that we've got this year. Now, the penalty incident at Fir Park, I mean, that is absolutely going to get spoken about regardless of what team it is within this title race.
And by the way, the comments on that came, I think this is what said that
one
aside.
No one in the skin in Scotland.
It came well without Scottish football, I should say.
And on this show today, we would be doing is quite rightly, you know, praising Celtic for what's been an incredible incredible season, an incredible achievement for Martin O'Neill to get the Celtic side over the line. And you quite rightly pointed out that you didn't like the fans that were running on the pitch. That's the reason we're talking about it, because they've done it. So if they don't run on the pitch, we're talking about how incredible this season's been, how incredible Celtic's part's been, how incredible Hearts' part's been, the 87th minute winner, Fidaiz Mehdi, the scenes. The reason that we're talking about these incidents is because Celtic fans have went and done it. So, and Andrew, again, it's overshadowed what was an incredible day for Celtic fans.
You mentioned John Beaton. We spoke about it on Friday. When it happened, these are unfortunately developing sort of day by day. But anyway, thank you to Andrew. And that was a nice moment for you, Andrew, that you let us in on at the start as well. So hope you enjoyed your weekend. Keep the calls coming. We'll speak to you next.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hannah's here alongside Andy Halliday as we look back on the season that just finished, and what a season it was. Sheila is next up on the line. How are you, Sheila?
Hi. Oh, I'm on top of the world, actually. Thank you. I'm on top of the world. Hi,
sum
Gordon.
It all up
Hi,
for
Andy.
Us then.
Hi,
were you
Gordon.
One of these ones that always had faith that it would end this way, or did you have your moments of doubt?
Do you know what? I believed on Wednesday. I actually thought Derek McInnes was shooting himself in the foot and his team's morale by what he said about another team. I also thought going into Saturday that it was better to be chasing a win than having the option of a draw, because you wouldn't know at one point in the match if you should stick or twist. I was also glad that Hearts went into the lead as they did, because it gave us something to chase. And you know what Celtic have been like this year when they've been ahead. They've lost goals, they've got shaky. So the way it panned out was just absolute theatre and was sort of scripted. So I didn't watch the match, got somebody to text me afterwards. I went a big walk with the dogs at Portland Cross.
A few people have said this to me, by the way. I spoke to a guy today who said that he couldn't watch it, so he went and bought a new car.
Oh, well,
and doesn't they can't remember?
I spoke to.
Can't remember what he paid, or like, you know, what he agreed the terms of the finance or anything, because he couldn't face it.
I spoke to a friend of mine last night who's now a humanist celebrant.
Obviously,
was conducting a wedding ceremony on Saturday afternoon
during the game.
Well, the game was going on, and they were just about to reach the point where they were asked to, you know, the I do moment, if you like, Gordon. And many members of the congregation shouted out the Dyson Maida had scored.
Andy, it's funny because everything that's happened this weekend, we're going big picture of a title win, we've got the scenes afterwards. It's like trying to find room to talk about the actual football match and how it played out and how Celtic won it. And Sheila's talking about maybe Hearts shot themselves in the foot, maybe it's hard to go. And I don't know if they did play for a draw. How damaging do you think it was for Hearts going in at 1-1 rather than 0-0? Because you're buzzing to score the goal, but when you get pegged back...
League defining.
You think so?
I think so, yeah. And again, we'll never know. Because finishes 1-0 at half-time, it's obviously quite possible that Celtic can come back and win the game, but you didn't see Celtic scoring at that point in time. I can't actually think off the top of my head what was Celtic's best chance before the penalty kick. It didn't seem as if they were threatening Swallow and Hearts goal at any point. I actually felt, and I still feel this way, that I thought Derek McInnes got his game plan absolutely spot on. Now, while people might say that he was trying to play for a draw, it didn't seem that way. I thought he was fairly comfortable with leaving Austin Trusty on the ball and trying to deal with everyone else, trying to be really compact, trying to spring on counter-attacks. And I thought it worked to perfection. I thought Celtic looked as if they kind of ran out of ideas when they were in possession. And it almost typified Celtic this season that they'll find a way. So it got to the 70th minute, and like you said, when Martin O'Neill made the changes, they went two strikers, and the real change, I thought, was when Iheanacho opens himself up and hits the post, because from then to the end of the game, you then felt it was coming.
But did you though? Because
I've
seen so many people say that Iheanacho hit the post at that moment. They thought that meant it was Hearts' day.
I mean, I really did think it would, because I just think it's something we've seen all season long. Yeah, I think was it 12 times Celtic have won the game if the 87th minute onwards. So again, it's a move that we've seen all season. You just expected it to come, and there was a siege at that point. You've got to say it was waves of attack for the last 10 minutes of the game, and you felt as if Celtic were going to get big opportunities, and that moment came. Now I've no doubt if you're of a Celtic mind and you know what's at stake at the end, that you maybe do feel a wee bit hopeless and you don't see it coming. But having obviously watched Celtic as much as all you guys and everyone on the phone throughout the season, they've just got an incredible way of finding a way, and they've done it again at the weekend.
Sheila, I've got my tongue slightly in my cheek here. Does this mean that if Celtic do win it by 15 points again, we're allowed to tell you all that that's boring and it's much better when teams run you close?
Look, credit to Hearts. I totally admire their team effort. They were a magnificent team this season, and we might have lost more games, and you know the chaos at Celtic, but I thought Hearts were absolutely fantastic this year. Can I just say one thing though?
Of course.
See, when Martin O'Neill came back, I absolutely distinctly, and it's a shame Hugh's not there, I remember him saying that Martin O'Neill's first press conference was, to quote, uninspiring. But that's the whole talent of the man. He's self-deprecating and he really plays down things. He's got a proven record and he's a really intelligent guy. He's got a law degree. I'm actually surprised sometimes that he didn't wear a cardigan for effect when he was giving his interviews, because he was coming across as a benign old grandpa, and all the time he absolutely knew what he was doing.
We'll never know what it was, Roger. The people in the dressing room, and maybe Andy can speak to this as well, even when Martin O'Neill was here the first time, people said it was a sort of hands-off role. It was never about the coaching. It was about man management. We'll never know exactly specifically, you know, as if there's this magic formula that Martin O'Neill brought, but whatever it was, it just worked. Whether it was the management team and the blend of the different types of skills, maybe just being that glue that held every, whatever it is, it paid off.
It's an ability to win games of football. Celtic have had managers, some successful, some less so, who come in and they're very principled and they've got great philosophies and they want to play the game a certain way, and you know their philosophy trumps everything else. Martin, his philosophy is to win games of football. It doesn't really bother him how he wins games of football. He just seems to find a way. Andy touched it earlier on, some of his in-game management, some of his substitutions, you know, taking off, I think he took off Luke McCown and sent on to Nekte at half time in the Old Firm game, making that change yesterday. Not every manager would have taken off one of his centre halves and put on a young centre forward with 20 minutes to go yesterday, but he finds a way of winning games. That's the magic of him. That is what has won Celtic this league. And I don't know what you think, Sheila, will he be there next season? Because if he's not, he's going to be some hard act to follow for the next guy.
Oh yes, but we've got so much to do at Celtic. There's going to be players leaving. I think he got the best out of Maeda by promising him he could leave. And this time Celtic should stick to their word, because I think they broke their word last year. Maeda owes us absolutely nothing. And I think that's why he came on to a game at the end. And he's playing every game as if it's his last game. So I think he did well there. Can I just say one final thing? And that is all the best to Larg Thistle in the Scottish Communities Cup on the 31st of May. They got through to the final against Auchinleck Talbot.
There you go. I did not know that, and we wish everybody well. There we go. That's you're an Ayrshireman. You should go.
I'm the other end. I wouldn't mind going to that, true. Actually. Largs and Auchinleck will be good. They've played in Junior Cup final before.
Is that where you got that tan, actually?
Yes.
He's looking bronze, didn't he?
Yeah, looking well, yeah.
Should have seen him last night in his pomp. The gaffer. Now, of the Scottish Football Writers Association. It was a big awards do. I should have seen him up there working the stage. He was magnificent.
I thought it was a good night.
Yeah, it was good.
Well done.
Thank you.
Happy with how it went?
I think so. Reasonably positive feedback, Andrew.
Do you feel like your gags all landed the way you wanted to? Were there a couple that maybe not quite? Or
the audience took a wee bit of warming up. I think next year what I might do is employ a warm up guy for the first 10 minutes.
I know just the man. He's on here tomorrow night. I'll put you in touch.
How is Mr. 0% chance for Celtic? I've not spoke to him.
He's calling himself a mug for getting it wrong. He's publicly declaring himself a mug, which is not the main word that people use for him after weekends like this. But
I was getting mixed up when Sheila was talking about cardigans and grandfatherly types. I wasn't sure whether it was Martin or Hughes she was talking about.
Thank you to Sheila. Let's bring in Scott on the other line. Hi, Scott.
Hi, lads. How you doing? Hope you're all having a good night.
Good, thank you, Scott. What's on your mind?
I've got a couple of wee points. First and foremost, I'd just like to say a big, massive congratulations for Celtic for actually going on and winning the league. But I, for one, a bit like Hugh, a bit of a mug. I didn't think we had it in us to do the seven games in a row. But we did do it. And,
see, in fairness, though, Scott, I know some fans now will say they always had faith and whatever, and I'm not saying they didn't, but it looked so, so unlikely, didn't it? You looked at the form at that point. To go and win the last seven seemed so unlikely, no?
100%, mate. With the defence we've got, you just got to think, and that's no disrespect to any one of our defenders, but it showed on Saturday. We left the top goal scorer of the Hearts team 5 yards to just run in and bullet a header into the back of our net in the final game of the season. when everything matters and they can't even do that job right on the day.
I don't know if you saw some of these stats. It was that have been doing the rounds. It was Scotland's coefficient that I saw them on, but it's the most losses by a champion since 1978.
Yeah.
Wow.
So obviously contributes heavily to the, you know, how close it was, and Hearts played their part, but that's quite something.
No, that was a treble winning season for Rangers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Can I ask Mr. Scotland coefficient if he can get a stat for me, or if you, the Hannah man, know the answer at the left? How many times has someone won every game in the split?
I'm not sure.
Good question.
I'm not sure it had been done before.
Yeah, I don't think it has.
I don't think it has either.
Don't think it has.
The other one I saw was Maida, the fourth player to score all in all post split games, something like that. But
I just show you like the incredible Celtic teams of the past, you know, some really good Rangers teams as well. Like, it's never been done before, I don't think. And if it has, it's certainly only once.
Because there's no point in, like, again, if people had faith all along, fair play to them. It's not about, I'm not saying that they're now looking at it after the event, but that day at Tannadice in particular, I know the pitch was bad and so on, but the notion that Celtic would go and win them all at full time that day seemed miles off, no?
Yeah, 100%. And my big thing, you know, I was on the Hearts train for a long period of time and I came off it before the split, because my thing was that I thought top of the table, second place, third place, I thought it would be interchangeable every week, because I could see all three of them dropping points. And Celtic didn't. No, Celtic never dropped points in the five games. I could never have seen that.
Do you think Rangers coming out of it straight away then played a part as well?
To that extent, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to lose 4 in the trot, I know it was done after essentially the second loss in a row. But, I mean, like it says, take absolutely nothing away from Celtic. It's other than that Falkirk game, the first one at home, where I did think they were comfortable favourites, I thought the remainder of the four fixtures for them were going to be really, really tight affairs.
What you're building up to saying is, I was right to not put my neck in the line and tip a title winner.
No, you're never right for that. I'm actually right for being wrong, if that makes sense.
You're a coward. You're still not telling us who you think will win the league.
But you're not as wrong as Hugh was.
Nobody is. Scott, sorry.
On the wrongometer.
Scott, these two are now bickering amongst themselves. What else have you got for us?
On to my other point, what I would like to say is most of the leagues have been well sewn up before the split, so that's probably how new teams have won every game.
Maybe.
Because there's been really nothing. The leagues have been suntanning themselves and there's been other players playing. No disrespect again to anybody, but
that's possible.
I don't know if you look back, there's probably not been many. There's not been a last game of the season winner since Helicopter. That bad day for us Celtic fans, obviously. But anyway, I'll stop rambling on. My other point was just a huge congratulations to Hearts, who have been unbelievable this season. When you think about it, we all ripped them off. Well, me and a lot of my mates, Rangers fans, mates, I come from a mixed background where we're all pals, all mixed, and many thought they'd have lasted the pace. So a big congratulations to them. And I'm just sick to the stomach of the Celtic fans getting on that pitch and goading the poor Hearts players. I still can't really celebrate the win properly. Even thinking about it, it's bringing nearly tears to my eyes, because you can't be doing that. It's just totally 1,000,000% unacceptable. Fans going on and goading the players, wait till they're off the park. Even you're not even meant to be on the pitch, but I just think that's just taking so much away for the other 59,000 Celtic fans sitting in there waiting in the walk round the pitch straight after the game finishes and stuff like that, and the kind of normal stuff that goes on after it. And I'm not taking the whole exploding with excitement into it. We were told beforehand to behave themselves and whatnot. I just can't. I don't know why we've not went as far as to say you're getting jail term if you're coming onto football pitches. Obviously,
well, what you alluded to that, Roger, that is the case in England and Wales. Yeah, so it might be something.
I mean, the First Minister John Swinney, I think, was discussing it today, said he wouldn't be against introducing that legislation. I believe there's talks planned between the Scottish Football Authorities and the Scottish Government at Holyrood, and I think this legislation will be in. Like Gordon, it might even be in for the start of next season.
That's a whole different discussion because how quickly do these things come through the Scottish Parliament? Yeah. Andy, it's interesting the way Scott puts it as well about, because you've got the obvious, like the potential criminality, the danger to players in the workplace and so on, but a lot of Celtic Park is booing in that moment. So the moment that you're supposed to be maximum joy, you're having to spend booing because, so I actually get where Scott's coming from. In typical fashion, I can see messages coming in saying it's not overshadowed the title win for me. Fine, but in that moment, some Celtic fans had to boo.
Yeah,
that's not how you want. That's, nobody wants to spend a title-winning moment like that, surely.
And it seemed like it was the majority. Listen, it was the minority that entered the field of play. It seemed like it was the majority of Celtic Park booing, and like you says, because it did overshadow that moment, shall we say? And honestly, I can't fathom what goes through people's heads to enter the field of play and try and go down an opposition player. I just can't get. You know, Hearts players would have undoubtedly had family at that game. You know, being how big a game it possibly was, so put yourself in their shoes. If you're in the stand and your son or your family member's on that pitch, and next thing you know, there's thousands of people swarming them to go to them. I mean, it goes without saying how horrible it is. But as you said, it was the minority, and certainly the majority of Celtic Park wasn't even happy with it.
Thank you to Scott. Before we move on, how does this sound?
Clyde One. Mega May.
On Friday, we paid out £350,000 to Peter. He never expected the call despite entering every week, and there are two draws again this week, so even more chances to win on Wednesday, £400,000. How good does that sound? Get involved. Text the word cash to 61054. That's cash to 61054. Text are £250 plus your standard network rate. You can enter at makemeawinner.co.uk. You'll find all the rules for this network competition there. It is over 18s only. Lines close 5 p.m. Wednesday for that, and it's cash to 61054. Good luck.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here, usually our two most reliable statos. The knowledge that these two have about the game is off the scale. I can't go anywhere without people telling me you two are sharp as tacks. You both thought that maybe no team had ever won all their post-split fixtures. Well, Mr. Scotland's coefficient is back on. He says Celtic have done it 6 times. So you are really close.
I'm far away.
To be fair, you've been sunning yourself in Largs. You had your big football writers do. This guy's thinking about retirement. I'll give you this end of season vibes. I'll give you.
I actually can't believe that though.
6 times.
Ah, that's mad.
So, there you go. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. 0141 951 1025. It is the number that you need quite a lot to get through from the weekend, of course. What have we got here? My goodness, these phone lines are lighting up quite something. William is on. How are you, William?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. What have you got for us?
Well, Hearts for me are the champions, and they should be awarded a 3-0 victory. It's as clear as day. And what leads me to that is not one problem or two. What it is, it's a chain of events.
Right.
And it shows to me that there's been intimidation here over a long period by Celtic Football Club and their fans, and that's resulting in referees bottling it consistently. In this game, if you look at the third goal, there are Celtic officials on the pitch, so the goal's invalid. But because there's a pitch invasion, the VAR post-goal VAR procedure was not able to complete. At the same time, you had confusion. So
do you just quickly on that, do you know that for a fact that they didn't, what would they be checking on that last goal? Sorry, what do you mean?
There was an infringement. So before the ball had crossed the line for a goal, there were Celtic officials that were on the field of play. and I have pictures of that. I've seen that today. You must have seen it yourself.
Right, I don't think I don't think VAR rules out a goal for that.
Well, is that a goal? Is it a goal when you've got officials who aren't in the starting lineup on the pitch? Is that shouldn't be a goal? Whether it's VAR or the referee, that's not a goal.
I don't think that's a rule, William.
So can Martin O'Neill just be on the pitch and that's a goal? I mean, that is the rules of football. Mm. You can't have people infringing upon the field of play. And my argument is that's invalid. And it's just it's a series of events that show us that there's a problem here. Then you add on the fact that there was 22 seconds left to play. And then you had the confusion on the sidelines with the Celtic manager saying it was over a minute left to play. And then he changed his tune later. So for me, there's clear evidence here that Hearts should be awarded a 3-0 victory, or the game should be replayed because sporting integrity is paramount.
See, just quickly, William, which is it? Because you very quickly went from confusion to clear evidence. I'm sure you'd agree that there's quite a significant, important difference between confusion and clear evidence. I mean, that's not the same thing, is it?
I'm talking about confusion on the sidelines, because you've got the fourth official telling Martin O'Neill, you know, there's still a significant amount of time to play. I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but their minimum time had not elapsed, and there's not been clear evidence that everyone heard that final whistle.
You don't have to blow the whistle.
Well, the final whistle, it should have happened after full time and injury time. There's still time left.
No, I just mean like in terms of like procedure, you don't have to, like, it's not the blowing of a whistle is not mandatory. It's like it's a recommendation. Obviously, that's the way we tend to.
Let's go with what we know, to be frank.
The question is, did Don Robertson say the game was over?
Yes, and I know that because I've spoken to people in the SPFL. The SPFL put a statement out yesterday confirming that Don Robertson had ended the game and had told both sides that the game was ended. I would have had more sympathy with your argument, William. Say there had been 3 minutes left and Hearts had thrown Schwallow up for that set piece and Celtic broke away and Osman scored and the Celtic fans piled onto the pitch with 3 minutes left.
That's a problem. That's a proper problem. Not to say this isn't, but you know
that,
what I mean.
That is a major problem because all manner of things can go wrong at that stage. And there would have been a possibility of an abandonment, as there was. And I think Slavia against Sparta in the Czech League last week, something happened and it was abandoned. It was a matter of seconds. Don Robertson, I thought, handled it as well as he possibly could and ended the game then. I don't think anyone, not even the most vehement Hearts supporter, would claim Hearts could score twice in the number of seconds that were left in the game.
Also a crucial question, because, and I know this is Planet Glasgow, so that's fine, you know, but William's a Rangers fan, so he's upset on Hearts' behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Are Hearts annoyed that the game was ended, or do they accept that it was ended?
No, I think Hearts accept it was ended, yeah. I don't think they're happy at the circumstances in which it was ended, but they agree it was ended.
Is that maybe quite telling, William? I mean, if Hearts felt that there was clear evidence, as you call it, that they should be awarded a 3-0 victory, I hope they do put their hands up and tell us about it in the coming days.
Well, for me, as I said, it's just a chain of events. And you even think about it, guys. Why is it that Hearts are playing Celtic in the final game at Celtic Park when Hearts were the league leaders? Hearts have clearly been hard done by. And I like both teams. I'm a Rangers fan, but I've got shares in Hearts. So I wanted Hearts.
William, Derek, see, Derek McInnes on Friday said that the fixtures had fallen perfectly. So this is the bit I mean about sort of because of the rivalry here, which I totally get, although I wasn't involved with the emotional side of it the way you guys are, but this stuff about sort of being like finding faults on other people's behalf. So Derek McInnes says he liked the way the fixtures fell, but you, on behalf of Hearts, are saying it's terrible that they had to go to Celtic on the last day. Do you feel like that's confusing?
That's his opinion, but I don't think that's reflective. I think there's been a lot of conversation online about this, and there's been a lot of chat.
Which is fine, but you would surely concede, William, that the conversation online, as great as it is probably less relevant than what Derek McInnes and Hearts think about it.
I think it's a reflection of what of the conversations in the pub, the conversations on the terraces, and you go different places. People use the C word that ends in N, corruption. I'm not arguing that there's corruption here. I'm arguing that there's been intimidation over a long period, and the referees, they will referee Celtic to a different standard to everyone else because they're scared of the consequences of making a decision that doesn't suit Celtic. And I think that's what almost everyone and their dog can see. People can see it outside of Scotland now. People can see it in England, over the world, and something needs to be done about
this.
There needs to be action.
Would you include the goal that most people feel Hibs wrongly got awarded against Celtic 2 weeks ago within that? Or is that just like, you know, how does that fit into the theory?
Usually we say these things iron out, but if you were to look at it, and pundits have done it recently, that Celtic got more decisions than other teams. And I get it, Celtic are a good team. They've got killer instinct, and you know they can play terrible in a match, and then for 10 minutes they're really good, and they end up winning a match 1-0 or 3-0. I get all that. But people have said time and time again, there's problems here. And I want to see some action. And I want to see action against people invading the pitch. And it's Celtic supporters again. They did it at Ibrox. They've done it here. I think the next time there should be points deducted. To be honest, here there should be points deducted. But it seems nothing is being done about it. So for me, Hearts are the champions. And FIFA should get involved here. Either a 3-0 victory or it should be replayed. And I understand you guys don't agree with me. But that infringing upon on the pitch for the third goal, that was not they was not able to look at that, and they should have done, and it should have been chopped off. So that's where I'm at, guys. And people phone up and give their take, that's my take.
Can I book you in for the night that Arps get awarded the 3-0 win? And
Roger don't need to change his result of the weekend.
It's true. A resounding victory for Arps at Celtic Park. Kept a clean sheet. Come on, you get the decisive say on this. You sat and listened patiently.
I don't even know where to start. How do you possibly unpack that? Listen, William, every club in the SPL, I try and say this all the time, every club in the SPL feel at the end of the season that they've been hard done by refs. Like I said, 4 weeks ago, I sat here on the Monday and I said that I think Celtic could feel aggrieved about the Hibs goal that stood, and I thought they should have had a penalty as well within the game. Now, for me, and this is my opinion, I think there's been some decisions that have went in Celtic's favour that I disagree with, but I think every team has felt that throughout the course of the season. One thing I don't agree with whatsoever is that Hearts should be awarded a 3-0 victory. I think if there was even a smidgen of a chance that that was happening, because like probably most, I waited with bated breath to see what Hearts' statements potentially going to be on Saturday night, given that we never heard from Derek McInnes, hadn't heard from the players, you know, we hadn't heard anything from them in the aftermath of the scenes at Celtic Park, and that wasn't mentioned within it. So that must be the case that there was almost an understanding and acceptance for Hearts that the game had ended.
Thank you to William. It was good fun. Let's play this. Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football. Come on, Beat the Pundit time. You two are the kings of Beat the Pundit. Don't tell Marvin Bartley I said that. And this is it, the last two-hour show with you two together, I think. So let's round it off in style. You've got until the end of this break to call. You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. Any big questions about Andy finishing his final season, retiring from professional football? No, everybody just want to
try
to
talk about it.
We got other bigger fish to fry. Maybe you want to discuss some of the other talking. Are there other talking points from the weekend? You can tell us. 0141 951 1025. We'll do this first. Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football. Come on then, Beat the Pundit time. Let's see how we fare. Marvin Bartley is, I think he's essentially won the regular season league on Beat the Pundit. He doesn't start on -1 the way you two do, but you know, you created those conditions for yourself.
The level of that man's improvement is remarkable.
Most improved.
On fire.
He's played the same amount of games as you. Most as well, Marvin. Fire. Despite
honestly?
His I know, despite his, what did he go and do for a few months? He was,
well, I can't remember.
How's that the case?
I know.
Is he still doing it?
No. That's mad. He's back anyway. Right, Jack is on the line. How are you, Jack?
How you doing, guys? All right.
Good, thank you. Have you done this before?
Never on earth. I just play along in the car. Good. Or the house, wherever I'm listening.
That's the way we like it. Do you do okay generally when you're playing along?
Sometimes I bomb scare, sometimes no bad.
It's an interesting level. Right, blue for Andy Halliday, red for Roger Hanna. Let's finish it off. Blue. Happy with that?
Both of them are machines, to be fair. So
let's do it. I send the season on a bit of a high if possible.
Just keep talking while I have a coughing fit if you can.
Yep, so we'll see how it goes. I think I'm 2 defeats this year. How many are you?
Is that right? I can't remember.
But listen, only more than that. You're only as good as your last game, so this is it.
You two are scrambling around. You've done me a good turn. Right, okay, let's give Andy something else to listen to. Jack, you have 30 seconds. Answer as many as you can. Pass if you do not know the answer, okay?
No bother.
Right, 30 seconds on the clock, and your time starts now. Apart from Falkirk, which other team did Chermite score a hat-trick against this season?
Hearts.
How many players in Celtic squad are on loan?
Four.
Jens Bertolascu is what nationality?
Pass.
Who was sent off for Motherwell against Hibs on Saturday?
Billy Pettigrew, pass.
True or false, next season will be Stenhouse Muir's first season in the Championship?
What was that, true or false?
Yep.
True.
James Forrest has 14 titles. Name any other Scottish player with more than 10.
Scott Brown.
Okay, let's bring him back. Andy Halliday, can you hear us?
Yes.
Right to the very end. And it's my fault. I hold my hands up and it's my fault for not checking. Right to the very end. And I'm looking at directly in the camera so the producers can see me. We've given questions about the team that he is employed by. Can we make it a new season resolution to not do that? I'm going to start you minus four.
You won't have that problem next season.
That's true. No, have a team. Right, 30 seconds. Your time starts now. Apart from Falkirk, which other team did Chermite score a hat-trick against?
Hearts.
How many loan players are in Celtic squad?
Four.
Jens Bertolascu is what nationality?
Danish.
Doesn't count. Which player was sent off for Motherwell against Hibs on Saturday?
Like what?
Doesn't count. True or false, next season will be Stenhouse Muir's first in the Championship?
True.
James Forrest has 14 titles. Name any other Scottish player with more than 10.
Billy McNeil.
Which Coatbridge-born Scotland striker played for St Mirren, Burnley and Wolves?
Stephen Fletcher.
Okay.
Oh no. It's just the Burnley Wolves. That was
all
that was in my head there.
Jack, what do you think?
To be honest, I was terrible, but I don't know, it's close.
I'm going to take a few of these off and we'll try my best. Apart from Falkirk, Chermite scored a hat-trick against Hearts. You both got it, well done. There are 6 lone players in the Celtic squad. Arthur, Cerachi, Aroko still technically, Mvuka, Adamu, Chivanchera. What did you say?
Four, I think. How am I getting that?
Jens Bertolascu is Danish. No shock. Andy's the teacher's pet. The only teacher's pet I've ever known that doesn't play. How does that work?
Some man.
Is it true that he stood up at the Motherwell Player of the Year Awards
next year and, that, so.
And gave you a big sort of ringing endorsement? Word has reached me.
I didn't
like that. Didn't even play.
I mean, it's because the 45 minutes of sheer abuse I took before that for Tam Kevin.
If he goes to Celtic, would he take you as his number two?
I very much doubt that.
No.
Okay. Elliot Watt was sent off for Motherwell, one of Andy's teammates. Talk about bias here. That's what I'm starting to see. Andy's intimidated the producers into putting these questions in. True or false, next season will be Stenhouse Muir's first in the Championship. It is true. You both got it. Andy still stays in front. James Forrest has 14 titles. Name another Scottish player with more than 10. None of you got this.
Callum McGregor.
Only McGregor, Bobby Lennox, or Sandy Archibald of Rangers, apparently. So there we go. And which Coatbridge born Scotland striker played for St Mirren, Burnley, and Wolves?
Chris Awelamo.
I wouldn't have got that, to be fair.
No.
I actually initially thought Stephen Thompson and thought he's not played for Wolves, and then.
A 4-2 for Andy, minus his one, ends up my 3-2. I just don't know if I can take the Motherwell ones off him as much as I would like to, but it was close enough. Jack, who's your team?
I'm a Rangers fan.
Did you watch it at the weekend? I'm trying to find out more about, like. Yeah?
What, did you care? Rangers match?
Yeah.
I watched the Rangers match, aye. It was to be a kind of training session feel about it. But. I was more kind of interested in Andrew Kavanagh's kind of statement after, you know, like doing the rounds and stuff. So
what did you make of it?
He's a businessman, you know what I mean? And I think you don't get to that level of success in business if you don't have plans to kind of mitigate a bit of loss at the start and stuff. So we'll see. I'm But I've been on the show, I think, once or twice this season backing Danny Rowe, so I'm glad he's kind of come out and said that. There's less confusion through the pre-season and stuff.
Are you confident he's the right man, or are you just more happy that that's a line drawn under it for now?
I'm a bit of both, to be honest. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, to be honest. I think that I've seen a vast improvement. And I think I said the last time I was on, Gordon Dale and Hugh Keevans were on, and I said that if you mark it just as progress, you know, never mind success in terms of trophies or whatever, but there's been progress with the squad that he inherited and the couple of players he brought in January. So if you're on that trajectory, then let's get a pre-season in. He can build his own squad, inverted commas, and let's see what happens. Can I just quickly say, Andy Hardy, congratulations, mate, on your career. You know, sad to see every footballer has to hang their boots up, but when you were at Rangers, thanks for the memories, pal. Enjoy your retirement.
Thank you very much, Jack.
And I'm enjoying your podcast with your brother. Superb.
Thank you.
Well, that's his pet project, that. He's into that stuff. Watch that space. You want to give it a wee plug? What's it called again?
The Margins. We've got some very good guests lined up for season two. We've already banked a few.
What day do you want me?
There'll be some surprising ones, I think, guessing there.
Finishing drills with Gordon Dale.
I'm on fire in the finishing drills.
Can you imagine it?
Should have been a striker.
His hip's done though. You're retired now. You're looking for new roles. You've got consultancy. Andrew Kavanagh calls you up and says, Andy, my namesake, I just can't quite decide, should I keep Danny Rowe for next season or not? What are you telling him?
For me personally, at this moment in time, I don't think he's the right man for the job. Now, listen, hope I'm wrong, hope I'm proved wrong, but I, for the body of what I've seen so far, I think there's some red flags there.
Mainly?
I think when you look at what Martin O'Neill has done at Celtic, Dennett McInnes as well at Hearts, you look at that real figurehead, that real presence, and you talk about mentality within a squad, I think that's driven between the two guys. I think that's driven between Martin O'Neill, I think that's driven for Dennett McInnes. I know he doesn't like his squad being questioned regarding mentality, but Mikey Moore thinks it is. Andrew Kavanagh thinks it is. It only really seems to be Danny Rowe that doesn't think it's an issue. Yet, he says that his club and his squad needs leaders. Again, that kind of reflects on the mentality. And I think a lot of that is always supposed to be driven by the top. I'll use Motherwell again for an example. Had loads of praise this season for the football they play. I don't think probably got enough praise up until maybe January for how much they run off the ball. Again, driven by the manager. So it's the same group of players, or the majority of the same group of players for the previous year. But such as the demands put in for the top, it filters all the way down. It creates the culture that everyone talks about. At this moment in time, I don't sense that for Danny Rowe. I don't sense that when you're listening to him speak in the media. Now, if you're not that, you have to be a top coach, which apparently Danny Rowe was when he came in. Again, I must admit, I'm not seeing that either. Now, he came in at a 13-point deficit between Hearts, got loads of credit for clawing that back to one. He's finished the season 10 points behind Celtic. I think it's a 13-point difference, am I right in saying, between them and Celtic, since Martin O'Neill's been in charge. Martin O'Neill's knocked him out of the two cups as well. This is a £40 million squad that's been assembled. I still don't think that this Rangers squad's as poor as what people say. To answer your question, I don't think he's the right man for the job, but he's been given the vote of confidence. He will be the manager next year, so he's obviously going to have to get it right.
That was good. There's a new edge to his punditry since he hung up the boots. That was a man at the top of his game.
Oh, yes.
The other side of it, look, I think obviously the main talking point, is he the right man for the job or not? You know, should he stay or should he not? That is the most important bit. What do you make of the fact, though, that, as we alluded to there, Andrew Kavanagh is at least trying to show decisive leadership, is public, is he conducts a series of interviews, and a lot of clubs don't do it that way, goes and speaks to the fans. Do people care about that, or is it just about getting it right in the end?
People do care about it, and listen, I'm not going to tell anyone not to give interviews with the press. I think, you know, the way he does it is open, it's transparent, it's honest, it's absolutely fine. I actually was surprised yesterday, and the only reason I was surprised yesterday, Gordon, nothing to do with Danny Rowe's body of work. Andrew Kavanagh publicly backed Russell Martin, Patrick Stewart and Kevin Thelwell, and he was left with egg in his face. I didn't think he would get down that line again. Now, it's one thing going into the room after the last game of the season and saying to Danny Rowe, listen, Danny, you're fine with us. You know, we'll go again next season. You're our man. It's one thing doing that It's a different thing coming out and publicly stating it. You know, when you have been left with egg in your face in the past. For me, I tend to agree with a lot of points Andy made here. Danny Rowell might be an outstanding coach, as you described him, Andy. Rangers need a manager. The teams who have succeeded this season have had managers who are in total charge of the operation. Martin O'Neill, Derek McInnes, James Bertolasco. I haven't ever got the impression that Danny Rowell is totally in charge of that squad of players.
What do you mean by that, though? Because, I mean, famously, Derek McInnes is now working under a structure that's different from what he's been used to in the past. And I know he gives off, for sure, figurehead vibes, but what makes you think that?
He does give off figurehead vibes, as does Martin O'Neill, as does JBA at Motherwell. Danny Rowell...
Oh, I don't know about that.
There are a lot of red flags, to use the phrase you used. The Tavernier incident last week was one. It was handled dreadfully by Danny Rowell. Now,
Andrew Kavanagh says yesterday, if you're asked to put on the Rangers jersey, you do it. No questions asked.
I also said that the head coach, he considered with Jim Gillespie intervening and telling him Tavernier should play. The game didn't matter. It didn't matter because Danny Rowell and the players had made a mess of the three previous games. All they needed to do was send out Tavernier. There's your last game. Thanks very much. Blah, blah, blah. Now, if he leaves Tavernier out and Rangers win 4-0, then he can say, I needed to win the game with 1-4-0. But he left Tavernier out and they lost 2-1. He's doing an interview before the game saying, it's disappointing James isn't here. And James was there. He doesn't give off the vibe that he's in charge of that squad of players and rules it with the rod of iron that managers need to rule squads with.
Rules it. I like that. Jack Denny, of those concerns Andy outlined, speak to you.
They're fair points, to be honest. I mean, they're not points I haven't thought of and looked at. I think the Tavernier that Roger was talking about there, the situation, I think that was compounded by the fact as well, the drop-off after the split. You know, I think it would... I don't know... Again, this is just kind of... kind of conjecture at this point, but I don't think it would have been an issue, or it would have happened the way it would have happened had Rangers still been challenging going into the last couple of games. I think it was the fans were down, the morale was down because of drop off, and I think it just compounded it. I think it was just like a maelstrom of everything happening at the one time. But no, I agree with the points in terms of coach. There was an argument prior to that that Rangers, you know, you could have a good manager, but we didn't have good coaches and stuff. So I do see where they're coming from. Andy's obviously got the kind of professional head, so he sees it more, and he's obviously, same with Roger, kind of connected to the game. But time will tell, ultimately. That's where we are. So,
good man. Appreciate it, Jack. Thanks for taking the time tonight. 01419511025. And if you call us now, we'll try our very best to get you on next.
1-4-1-9-5-1-1-0-2-5. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah are here. It's 01419511025. That is the number that you need. So do get involved and let us know what you are thinking. It should be quite straightforward for you. James and the Gorbals has sent it in. A nod to Celtic winning the title since 2012-13. Can you name the 10 different players that have been Celtic's top league scorer? Can you name the 10 different players that have been Celtic's top league scorer in a season over the last 10?
Benjamin Negan.
Yes, 16 goals. Or did he end up one short of your teammate?
Yeah, one short.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I thought this was interesting. This is what I sort of gleaned from it. He really cared about being the top scorer in the league, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I like that, is that not
so right? Yeah, I really like it.
See when Negren scored against Motherwell the other night?
Yeah.
I am certain Maswanisi's reaction was because it was Negren. Honestly, I was just because I was working, I was on the touchline, you saw me. He felt his knees. Now, I know, obviously, it was a big blow in the game, but I'm convinced it's because he thought he was maybe going to lose his...
That's an interesting point. I never noticed that, but I know for a fact, he had his eyes on that, because it's one of them, after the game, he's coming in. It was a Celtic score who scored. You know,
exactly. And he tailed off, didn't
and
he? Didn't
I personally like that.
At the end of the season.
I think you need that. You need that.
Did I see a clip on Motherwell's own media channels of him apologising in the Easter Road dressing room at the weekend for not scoring in recent weeks?
Yeah.
It's quite awkward to watch, I'm not going to lie.
I know. I think that was kind of the pressure that was put on him by the boys. But listen, he finished the top goal scorer. A brilliant achievement. There's not been many, was it? I think... I might be wrong, but I read that there's only been twice in the SPL era?
What?
A Motherwell player's finished top scorer?
Probably Higdon, Maswanisi, I would imagine.
Not bad.
Something like that. Right, Negrin, any more on the teaser?
Last season, Tyson Maeda.
Yeah, easy. Although, do you know, I say only, it was, was it 16 league goals for Maeda last season? He must have got so many in other competitions, if James and the Gorbals is correct. One more guess. Yes, Kyogo. Okay, let's leave it there. 01419511025. Ian's on the line. Hi, Ian.
Hi, how you doing, Paul?
Good. Right. What have you got for us, Ian?
It's just to kind of get your thoughts on the obviously the controversial decisions that have been made by the referees over the last few weeks, really, last month or so, since the split, really. I phoned up a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't manage to get on, but I was questioning why John Beaton was gave the Motherwell game. I thought it was a really, really strange decision to give that man the game, considering, I'm aware that since things have happened with Celtic fans and he's had a bit of trouble and stuff, that he has refereed Celtic games. But to put him in that position, when they could have used another referee, I think it put, I put it on social media that I thought it was the wrong thing. I thought that they should have had a thing to look after their employees. They've got a right to look after them and a duty of care. And I don't think they were looking after that man, because they put him in an untenable position. And something like that was always going to happen, and it turned out to be right. And now look at the situation he's in, and the decisions that have been made over the last few weeks have been seriously, seriously questionable. And I think it's no showing the referees up, and it's no showing the football up in a good light.
Not sure I really follow though. I mean, like, John Beaton, Roger is, what's the, so I think Nick Walsh is the only, is he the only one on the kind of FIFA elite list or whatever they call it? John Beaton, Kevin Clancy, Don Robertson. That's that kind of top branch. Forgive me if I've left the others out. They're going to referee the big games. I don't really get this notion that John Beaton was put in some sort of position that would have been different from anybody else. I mean, referees Celtic loads of times in a season, and Rangers and Hearts, and I don't know. I don't really follow Ian's notion that he shouldn't have been given that game.
Well, listen, if we go down that line, you know, we'll have individual callers on saying, oh, I really didn't want Stephen McLean at Motherwell v Rangers, and I really didn't want Kevin Clancy at Kilmarnock versus Aberdeen. We can't go down that line.
Do you think for me as well, right, more than anything, because obviously people argue that decisions have been right and wrong, which is fine, but see, the thing now with VAR is how selective we are when we ignore of how much a kind of joined up approach it is. So see, for all John Beaton is the focus of Ian's point, because he gives the penalty against Motherwell in the Celtic game. He didn't give it at the time.
Yeah.
And then he got called over by the VAR. Now, we all know there's a huge debate about it, with a Claret and Amber view on things, and I was there, and I didn't think it was a penalty at the time and whatever. But how can that... John Beaton didn't give that at the time. So, like, I'm genuinely, it's not trying to be smart about it, lost about this notion as if, you know, John Beaton was sort of desperate to give some penalty when he didn't give it.
Yeah,
he does give it when it comes to the VAR. Now, again, you don't agree with the decision, and loads of people don't, from far and wide. We've seen it. It's been an incredible reaction. But I, that's why I think when you pin it on like this one person, I don't know. I feel like it just becomes a bit selective.
Yeah. Well, in terms of my viewpoint, I think it was a really poor decision. I don't think it was a penalty. But to answer your question, Ian, I can speak a wee bit more personally about refs now that I've left.
Oh, that's right, you can't get a ban anymore.
For me, John Beaton is in the top two best referees in the country, for me personally. So that's the reason he's been given such a big game. We had a caller on earlier, I can't remember exactly who it was, but quite rightly pointed out the reaction to John Beaton individually in his personal life has been nothing short of disgusting. But the reason he's been given such a big game is I think he's a really, really good referee. I think loads of players will agree as well, because of not only how he referees the game, but how he referees players. I think he's really open in dialogue. I think he'll talk to players, or even have a bit of back and forth in terms of banter with players. And I think players like that. And that's the reason he's been given such a big game.
Yeah. And listen, what John Beaton and his family have been forced to go through the last few days is disgusting. It's absolutely terrible. It's in the hands of, as we said at the top of the show, Gordon, the criminal justice system. And big picture, your pal Willie spends a lot of his time trying to recruit the next generation of referees. We need more referees than ever before, because with the advent of VAR, you now have a referee, two assistants, a fourth official, a VAR, an assistant VAR. You see your team sheets before games, there's almost as many officials now as there are players. And it's tough enough for Willie to find and develop this next generation of match officials without them being put off by the thought of going through what John Beaton and his family have had to go through in the last few days.
Do you think part of this, Ian, is because the stakes were so high at the end of the season, so that intensifies things? It's also recently, so it's in the memory. Because you're a Rangers fan, I assume. I remember working at a game when you played Hearts at Ibrox. Hearts scored a goal there that should not have stood, according to Willie Collum and the KMI panel and all the rest of it. But it's almost like, I don't know, that was ages ago, so that doesn't impact the title the same way that one last week does.
No, but I mean, you know, I kind of thought...
Do you remember that one? Do you remember when under Russell Martin?
Kind of vaguely, yeah, I do, yeah. But I knew this was the road you would go down, that you can't pick and choose. I'm not saying, I'm just talking about specifically, that man has been threatened, right? And it was disgusting before. This is the exact situation I'm talking about. Now, that man, his family, have been put in a terrible situation before. But, and I'm not just picking on Celtic fans here, I'm just, this one thing is that, and when you put him into a game of that magnitude...
But that's my point, he's refereed in loads of big games since then, though.
I get that, but he's not refereed a game of that magnitude where... One situation.
He has, though.
He's refereed bigger.
No,
he's refereed bigger than that, probably.
He's refereed Old Firm games.
He's refereed Old Firm games.
No, it's not. When it, so I know it's, but you're not getting my point. When have we ever had a league season like this? This is all you've been going on about.
Who would you have given the game to last week, Ian?
Well, I'll tell you what. I would have given it to anybody apart from him. Because, see, you're, no, I'm being honest. Right? Because, see, as an employer, right? If you don't get a duty of care to him,
do you know what I'm noticing as a theme tonight? Is there was like the caller earlier who was on about it on behalf of Hearts, and now Ian's worried about John Beaton and thinks that he's not. Look, this is just a roundabout way of saying that it's, you know, of picking up on decisions that aren't going the way you want them to go. I'm pretty sure if John Beaton has got fears about his care in the workplace, it's between him and his employer. Are we seriously going to sit here and determine that he's not been cared for?
I think I find even more baffling is John Beaton's not refereed a game of bigger magnitude than Celtic at Fir Park last Wednesday.
Of course he has.
He most certainly has. But no, like I said, John Beaton's been picked for that game because he's a very good referee in what was a big game. And that's the reason he got it.
Some interesting theories on the go tonight. Thank you,
Steph.
Ian. I was going to say, you could do that, man. You can't get a ban anymore, Roger.
I wouldn't do that.
On you go.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Who's the best ref in Scotland?
I would say John Beaton or Don Robertson. And again, a big factor that is the two of them, like every other ref, all make mistakes, but it's how they are within it. I think the ref need the game well enough. I think they let the game flow more than others.
Nick Walsh isn't one of the best refs in the country, says Andy Halliday.
That's my take of tomorrow.
Funnily enough, not because the part of the reason I was asking Ian as well about how things are intensified here and it's what's on the line. Look, it's on our TV screens right now.
Manchester United.
Nottingham Forest yesterday, the PGMOL have now already admitted that goal should not have stood. Yeah. Now, in our world, but I get maybe they do react to it the same and because we are involved in it up here, but in our world that becomes... What if that goal had relegated somebody else? What if that had sealed Man United Champions League qualification? That's sport, and we're kind of seeing it everywhere, no?
I was having a discussion with one of the country's leading administrators last night at the dinner, and we spoke about that Manchester United goal. Imagine that had happened on Saturday at the Hearts Celtic game. The home team had won 3-1 or 3-2, and then on the Willie show... He has to admit that the goal shouldn't have stood and really the other team should have won the league. The other one that's gone in the last few days is the Southampton Spygate. Imagine that happened up here. Oh, my goodness.
And in amidst all again, the talk of the way that it's gone and the decisions in the last few weeks, you kind of forget that the assistant flags offside for the goal, for the decisive goal at the weekend. So imagine, shudder to think, imagine that goal got wrongly ruled out.
And that again, that is an insight if there was no VAR. And I think we're at a point now that loads of people are for VAR, loads of people are against VAR. I've never been a fan of VAR, but I can see its benefits. And I moved on to the sense that I don't think we could ever go back to no VAR for offsides. I think it's honestly...
Without VAR, Hearts would have won the league.
And
because the Dyson might have gone, wouldn't have stood.
But also, Callum Osman might be... we're prone to exaggeration here, but 3 yards onside?
I don't know the distance. He's certainly clearly onside. So... VAR,
yeah, I've exaggerated VAR there, got, you know what I mean.
VAR got to the correct decision, but had VAR not been there,
that goal's ruled out, Hearts win the league, and then all we're getting is the reverse accusation of what we're experiencing at the moment.
Yeah,
it's all good fun, something like that. Ian, thank you. 01419511025. I was going to say, any Hearts fans out there, please give us a call, but do you think they're in that state of they don't want to see, hear anything about this at the moment? That's just the way it is. Just go behind the couch.
I'm not sure it's the right word for Hearts fans, but they've got into hibernation.
I think every Hearts player and member of staff, including Braga and McInnes, who were there last night to accept the awards, are already out of the country.
Very gracious, I thought, of Claudio Braga turning up at your event and collecting his Player of the Year award. And I know it's supposed to be an off the record night, you don't need to tell us all the detail, but Derek McInnes turned up, stood up, gave his speech.
Yeah, and listen, it took a lot from both Derek and Claudio to turn up. Claudio arrived at the dinner last night with his father, his stepmom, my cousin, and three of his closest friends over from Portugal for the event. I was sat with him during the evening, and you can imagine the disappointment that is going through everyone at Heart of Midlothian Football Club. It took a lot for them to turn up at a public event attended by over 500 people last night. The two of them spoke eloquently, they spoke extremely well about the season and about the disappointment at the end of the season. And you're right enough, they are away on their holidays now, and it's to be hoped that they get a rest and they enjoy it.
Thank you to Ian. Let's bring in Ryan, who's next up. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, I was calling in to see what your opinion is. Hi, guys, so sorry to tease up. I was calling in to see what your opinion is. I would say, do you think this could be maybe a better period for Hearts than for Celtic Rangers? Because both of us are going through, I mean, obviously I'm a Celtic supporter, we're going through a transitional period. We're going to have massive change. And I think Rangers is the same. See if McInnes stays at Hearts, which I think he will. I mean, everybody's saying that he's gone, Shanklin's gone. I think that's been a disservice to Hearts, so congratulations to them. I think they were the ringmate Scottish footballer I've seen. I think what happened the other day is that boy says earlier on, I totally agree with all that. But anyway, back to what I was saying, do you not think if Hearts, that guy's serious and he puts in money, do you not think McInnes and Hearts are in a better chance going forward next season than Celtic or Rangers? Because none of us know what we've got next season. And I think that I was also going to say my second point was Sean Maloney. I don't think he's getting the credit, because I think a lot of that what's happened at Celtic has been done to him too.
What do you make of the first point? In theory, Hearts have a plan and a structure that should see them actually only get stronger from here. Now everybody expects Celtic and Rangers to maybe do the same.
But
I like Ryan's question.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Bloom, when he started putting the money in a year ago, said he felt Hearts could win the league within 10 years, and they nearly won it within 10 months. He will continue to put money in. I think the standard of player at Hearts will continue to increase. Next season, they will have new challenges. They'll have Champions League qualifiers. They were knocked out of both domestic cups quite early this season, Gordon, which allowed them to focus on the league. They'll need a bigger squad, they'll need a stronger squad. They will inevitably lose some players. They'll miss Craig Halkett for a chunk at the start of next season with his injury. But I take on board Ryan's point. I think Tony Bloom and Derek McInnes will go out this summer and strengthen all departments. I think they've already done some pre-contract stuff. The lad was over, name escapes me, Tony, midfield lad that's coming over.
Right, French guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's...
I know that's not his surname.
I know, he's... they will strengthen, they will be strong. But as things still stand, Ryan...
Brent Hart?
Sorry?
Renaud.
Yeah, that's the fella. Yeah.
Probably not how you pronounce it right and all, but
Renaud. They're still at a financial disadvantage to Celtic and Rangers.
Huge.
Huge. So it will be a big ask for Hearts to push Celtic the way they pushed them this season.
How much sort of calm heads and patience do you think it's going to require, Andy? Because I've got this like hypothetical scenario next year where Hearts actually finish third, but it's a solid third and it's a really good third, and people say that's regression and it's gone backwards. Now, of course it is in terms of league position, but it might not actually be, if that makes sense.
And listen, I think it's a fair point. We've seen examples of clubs really overachieving in a season, falling back to maybe what's expected of them, and that man just lost his job, essentially. I don't think that would be the case at Hearts with Derek McInnes. I think the supporters can appreciate this incredible journey he's took them on throughout the full season. Now, this is just my opinion. I can completely understand the other half of the agreement as well, but for me, Hearts won't get a better chance than they got this year.
Yeah,
Hearts aren't getting to 3 minutes of winning the league next season, or the season after, or the season after that, for me personally. Now,
in 5-6 seasons?
Towards the end of the 10-year plan that's been spoken about, potentially, because, I mean, you've seen what Tony Bloom's investment's done at Brighton, you've seen what it's done at Union St. Joe, but I think it's near impossible for Celtic to be as poor this year as they were next season as they were this season. I think it's almost impossible for Celtic to recruit as poorly as they did this season, next season. And I don't think Rangers are going to have a Russell Martin period next season either. So I think it's almost guaranteed that Celtic and Rangers will improve. What's the level of that improvement? I don't know. I don't think it's enough for Hearts to catch it. I actually think if Hearts can manage to get 80 points again next year, or there or thereabouts, or a wee bit more, is a brilliant achievement. Celtic won't finish on 82. There's no chance.
Thank you, Ryan. Let's pause and take more of your calls when we return.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One's Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna here for the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. You've got a fairly simple teaser, I think, tonight. Thank you to James and the Gorbals for sending it in to fulltime@clydeone.com. Since 12-13 season, 10 men have been Celtic's top league scorer. Can you name them? Negrin, Maida, Kyogo.
Hey, Giacomakis.
Yes.
Lee Griffiths.
Yes.
Odson Edward.
Yes, well done. Okay, he done it on a few occasions. Let's bring in Stephen. How are you, Stephen?
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks very much for taking my call.
Pleasure. What are you thinking?
Well, listen, it was obviously after that blockbuster finale to the season, and it's obviously only a couple of days, so the dust has not fully settled yet. But my point on it was that this season, I think what's making it so hard for Hearts and Rangers fans to deal with this one is the complacency. You know, up to 3 weeks ago, Rangers were probably favourites for the title, right? Hearts probably should have had it in the bag. Their away form in the last maybe 7 games probably ultimately let them down. Do you know what I mean? And Celtic never really were given a chance. We were laughed at third and fourth place. They were always talking about Celtic kind of just went about their business, you know, delivered it, kept their head down, just kept doing it, kept going. And see, when you ultimately strip it down, right, the best Hearts team in 40 years could have beat the worst Celtic team in 20 years. And that's ultimately, when you strip it all back, that's the fact.
What if this is the worst Hearts team for the next 10 years?
No, you listen, to be fair, I think Hearts have had an incredible season. Genuinely, I love the way they do their analytics, their approach to signing players. It's been the best, genuinely, and I say it as a clock. I wasn't a backhanded slap there when I said about the facts. Hearts have had an amazing season, genuinely. Breath of fresh air. Obviously, I know Rangers fans probably won't admit that, but the challenge that they made this title race something that in my lifetime, I think it's the best title win. I mean, I'm 51, right? It's the best. It eclipses 97 when we stopped 10 in a row for me. Wow. Just for the sheer excitement in it. And
you go along with that, Andy. I feel like everything, just because tensions are so heightened and so many factors, we do need to pause, I think, to reflect on just how good this season was. Mm-hmm. For you and maybe fans of other teams, maybe the way to look at it is like a Netflix series that you really, really loved. You loved it. You just didn't quite like the ending, but in time, you still appreciate the journey that it took you on.
100%. Stephen mentioned the season that Celtic stopped 10 in a row. We had Helicopter Sunday. We had, you know, that final day where it went to Celtic at Rugby Park and Rangers at home at Dunfermline. But this season for me has been the best. And it's because the good and the bad. I mean, it's all the stories that we've had within this season. We had Russell Martin, we had Wilfred Nancy, we had, you know, Brendan Rodgers with a Honda Civic. I mean, all the subplots that we've had within this season. John McGlynn's impact in the season, Jens Bertel Askew and what Motherwell have done, Derek McInnes with the best heart side in 40 years, as Stephen called it. It's been incredible. I mean, it well and truly has. And I really do hope, obviously I'm really passionate about Scottish football, that I hope next season we get something similar. I hope that even Hibs can improve it ever so slightly. I hope Aberdeen can improve. I hope that Neil McCann continues that form that he's going on with Kilmarnock since he's been at his tenure. If Motherwell and Falkirk keep doing what they're doing, I don't think we've ever had as many eyes on Scottish football as we have as this season, and a big part of that has been down to what Derek McInnes has done with his heart side. Now, to mention what Stephen said during the break, I was just actually writing down Celtic's transfer window this season.
Over the two windows,
17 players Celtic have signed this season. As I'll repeat, it is impossible for them to get the same level.
Go on, read them quickly in case we've forgotten.
I mean, it might get to 58 by the time. So Chivan Chara, Adamu, Mvuka, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Araujo, Benjamin Arthur, Sirachi, Tanetki, Balakwisha, Negan, Inacho, Tierney, Ross Duan, Inamura, Yamada, Osman, Simpson, Pusey. It is impossible Celtic have as bad a two recruitment window as they had this year.
Stephen, what did you call this? The worst Celtic team in...
Genuinely, I think, and I know they won the league, but I think performance-wise, for the amount of games that we'd actually lost, the amount of points that we lost in the last 20 years, it's probably not the poorest performing Celtic team, I'll maybe then say, but there's no way that you can say, for me, genuinely, up until probably the split, like most Celtic fans, I kind of thought our chances had gone. You know, I think the season was so tumultuous, as we say, three different managers, the Wilfred Nancy debacle, a really strong Hearts, and at one point, a really strong Rangers. You know what I mean? Everything just looked as if...
Does that worry you for next season then, or do you think this is like the, I don't know, wake-up call or whatever the phrase you might use?
I don't think as a Celtic fan out there that will be worried about next season after this season. I don't think genuinely this season was the sum of all fears for us, you know, for like 90% of the season. And then for the last 10% of the season, it was a sum of all fears for rivals. You know, at the very end, Maeda clicked into position, delivered, and, you know, his goals probably single-handedly turned the tide for us. Listen, I would love to see Celtic go and get a new manager. I really like Andy's ex-old manager. I'd love to see him there. It may be something that happens or it doesn't. Whoever comes in, I think we'll probably have the backing of the board after the transfer windows. And Andy just kind of admitted it there and said, you know, those transfer windows were absolutely atrocious in every sense. Thankfully, Celtic, by hook or by crook, you know, managed to go over the line at the very end there with some big performances, with some players that probably had they contributed an awful lot midway through the season, but just came in at the very end, you know. So, look, fingers crossed, we have the same gravitas for the season for all the clubs for next year. But I thought this season was excellent.
It was, Stephen. Do you know what? It's a nice positive note to end on. There's not a lot of positivity, but the music is playing, so let's do it. Thank you to Stephen. Quickly on your teaser, you're looking for the last 10 men who've been Celtic's top league scorer: Negrin, Maeda, Kyogo, Giakoumakis, Edouard Griffiths,
Hooper.
Yep.
Was it Dembele?
No.
Oh.
Chris Commons?
Yes.
Anthony Stokes?
Nope. So in Dembele's season, if it wasn't him...
Scott Sinclair?
Yes.
Matt O'Reilly.
Brilliant. Well done. Thank you, Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna. I think there is a lot still to cover from the weekend. So we're back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Looking forward to it already. And then, of course, there's a Scotland squad. The Scotland World Cup squad gets announced tomorrow, and we've no mentioned it.
At noon.
We've got 30 seconds for you to name your 26-man squad each. I don't think it's going to work. Tune in for that tomorrow. Have a good one.